do this. Welcome to the Games Beat Decides podcast. This is the podcast where we decide everything about the world of games so you don't have to think for yourself. I'm your host, Jeffrey Grubb, and with me is...
Mike Benatti. Hey.
In today's episode, we got some news, we got some games, there's a lot of games coming out, there's a lot of news, there's some stuff we can talk about, some stuff we can't. First, I want to thank everybody for joining us. You can get more from me and Mike at gamesbeat.com. If you have something to share with us, you can email the podcast at gamesplus@venturebeat.com. If you're listening to this on the website, like player widget thing, you can subscribe to the audio version of this show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, anywhere where pods are caught. If you like the show, you can rate us. It helps people find the show. And finally, thank you to Carlos Ayn, who is Insane in the Rain Music on YouTube for the use of our theme song. Mike, how you?
Yes.
How you doing?
You know, pretty good considering the all day flying yesterday and then writing the preview story last night.
Yeah, lots of travel.
Busy day today, but I'm good. Can't complain.
Yeah, so you know what? We should probably just start there. Where you been, Mike?
Oh, I was in Anaheim for the Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order preview event, which also meant they got to go to Disneyland and finally go to Galaxy's Edge and have a grand old time with all that. But, you know, for the video game show here, I'm sure you probably want to hear about that video.
Yeah, real quick, I do want to hear, like, was the going to Disneyland and Galaxy's Edge, was that, like, part of going to this whole thing?
So we got to go into the park. There's like a morning session and afternoon session. So when we weren't doing that, we got to go to the park, which was pretty close to where the thing was. And then like late at night after the park closed, they had like a party just for the people who were there at Uga's Cantina, which is like the bar in Galaxy's Edge.
It was fun. Well,
I may have had a few too many Star Wars drinks.
I mean, if it's not like every day you get to go and like have an Alderaanian ale or whatever the fuck they have there.
They had things. It was super fun.
That sounds like a really good time. But I may, from the sounds of it, may be more jealous that you got to play Jedi Fallen Order, because this sounds like it might be a pretty good game.
It seems like it's going to be a very good game. I got to play for like 3.5 hours, like almost leading into 4 hours. And it was basically just the game. And it's like they kind of like let us play starting from like when it seems like you finished the first planet. And there's like a choice of two planets to go to. It was Zepho, which is like a new planet they made for this game. And Darthamir, which I think is where Darth Maul's from. So that's been in some other lore stuff before. They're basically like, you want to go to Zepho. It's a bit more like level appropriate, blah, blah, blah. So I basically like did all of the main story stuff on Zepho and explored a bit. And even after doing that, you unlock Kashyyyk. And I even like went to Kashyyyk for a hot second and did some of the things there. So it was like a big, lengthy play session, which was awesome.
So you feel like you got a really good grasp on what this game is and like what people can expect from it.
I like totally understand what the
game is. So what is it?
And it's Star Wars meets Metroid Prime meets a bit of Dark Souls and a bit of Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Okay.
I think those are the kind of three game ingredients. The Metroid Prime thing is just the way how, and it's specifically Metroid Prime 3 Corruption, because you have the multiple planets in that one. It's kind of like that, where you can kind of like planet hop a bit. Like you're going to have a main objective, but you can like, oh, I've unlocked this thing here, so now I can go back to this place. And just the way like the worlds kind of unfold, where you're kind of going almost room by room, and each room will have like, you know, some kind of different challenge, like be it slight platforming or fighting or maybe a puzzle. A bit more heavy on like combat than say Metroid was, like Metroid maybe a bit more puzzle focused. But then you're constantly like, there's like a path you're going, but you're constantly kind of like unlocking shortcuts to other ways you came from, and some rooms will have multiple paths, so it's not like a quote-unquote open-world game, but it's non-linear in that sort of Metroid Prime sense of the word. And you're also, like, a Metroidvania, you're getting, like, new powers that open up paths you couldn't get to before, you know, stuff like that. Dark Souls with the combat, because it's that kind of more defensive-based combat, a bit more of, like, that parry-based combat. The parrying is cool because, like, you have the block button, you hold it down, you take no damage until you lose your stamina. But if you tap it right before you're attacked, then you can, like, you can reflect like a blaster shot that's being shot at you right back at them, and or you can counter like a physical attack at you. So it's kind of fun, like especially if you're in these fights with like range and melee people, because it's like you're focusing on like timing the parry so that you can shoot back the blaster while also trying not to get hit by people. So it kind of just like adds a lot of fun to the fights. And then the Tomb Raider thing, like at the end of Zeffo, like I literally went into a tomb. Oh, it was like a tomb of some old Jedi guy, and it was like suddenly much more puzzle focused, right? And I was like, this is super Rise of the Tomb Raider-y right here.
It sounds like there's like a good amount of variety. The pacing seemed pretty good, like you're doing something different every like 20 minutes or so, or what?
Yeah. And plus, you know, there's a lot more story beats than like, say, a Dark Souls or even a Metroid Prime to kind of help carry things along too. There's like a lot of, you know, even though you're going towards that main objective, if you kind of explore and go off the beaten path, you'll find a lot of different things. Like big ones are like upgrades, and it's kind of like the Zelda thing where you have to get like three of them to increase your max health or your max like force power. And then there's a bunch of cosmetic things, and they're almost all about the lightsaber. Like you can find different lightsaber colors or hilts. Or, like, other different parts there. Or even costumes for Cal. Which is cool. Because, like, Cal's, like, a pretty set-in-stone character. Like, it's not, like, a created character. But still has, like, a bit of that almost Jedi Academy fun where you can customize your lightsaber, at least. Which is kind of entertaining. And also just, like, you know, you can find things that you scan. Again, Metroid Prime feeling. But that gives you experience points, just like killing things does. And, you know, use that to unlock abilities in the skill tree.
Yeah, I'm excited for this. I was definitely having the feeling like, oh yeah, like there is something coming out in November. It's that Star Wars game. That's how I felt like last week, and now today, reading what I could of your preview and kind of getting the takes from everybody online on Twitter. It's like, oh man, now I actually can't wait for that game. All of a sudden,
I mean, yeah, it looks really good. Controls are super snappy. The characters seem really great so far. Like, I love just the Cal and his droid, and the droid, like, follows you around everywhere. He's even, like, kind of your health refill mechanic. It's not like, it's almost more like you use potions in that, like, you don't, like, regenerate
health. He's your Estus Flask, but, right.
Yeah, exactly. So, going back to that. But, he also, like, sometimes can scan things, like I said, or he'll activate panels for you, and you push down on the D-pad for that, and you're usually prompted to. But if there's nothing for him to do and you push down the D-pad, just kind of, like, talk to him. And it's, like, adorable. He'll be like, BD1. He'll be like, beep, boop. Ah, just making sure you're still back there.
That's nice.
And I'm like, yes.
My kids love droids. Like, oh, yeah, droids are really cute, aren't this they? Is like, people just love droids, like, right from birth. So.
Right. This is, like, the most dog-like droid I've seen in a while, too. So I think, I think BD-1's going to be a hit. The pilot character, which is, like, a pure alien. It's some new species they invented for the game. I can't remember the name. But he's kind of fun. He's kind of the comic relief, and he's, like, a bit more like, what are we doing here? Oh, no. Like, he's the George Costanza, I guess. I don't know. But he's fun. Yeah, it's all working.
Oh, boy.
It's all working so far. I could keep playing it. That's for sure.
Do you get a sense of, like how long it is? Like, you played three to 4 hours. If they're going to sit you down for that long, there must be quite a bit more to it, right?
Right. So, you know, I didn't do the first planet. I spent about 3 hours on Zeffo, and that was just doing main stuff. And it showed me, like, the completion rate. It was something like, it wasn't much. It was, like, 20% or something, right? So there's still a lot more to do there. And then there was at least, you know, Kashyyyk, Darthamir, and that first planet, whatever it's called. And I know there's probably more planets than that even. So I feel like that was, like, my one worry when I was starting, like, well, how long is this game going to be? Because I was going through that skill tree pretty quickly. Just in the demo, I'm like, I feel like I've unlocked like a third or like half of this stuff. But just based on like how many planets there could be, I think it's certainly going to be meaty enough. I mean, a game like this, you want to at least be 15 hours long, maybe more to like 100% it, right? If you're really going to go nuts with that stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think that's good because like you don't want it to feel slight, but you also don't want it to like drag on. There's like a good meaty part where it's like part of the curve. Where it's like you want it to fall right in there, and 15 hours is probably right. And it sounds like that's what it's going to end up being.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm just came away very impressed, and I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a strong Game of the Year contender.
Yeah, that's very exciting. That's very good to hear. I guess, you know, we're probably going to get that game for review pretty soon. So You know, it's only it's a month away, basically today. So yeah, that's very exciting. But until then, until we could like talk about it again, maybe both get our chance to play through it, the real game. Until then, what else have you been playing?
Well, I've been actually working through Luigi's Mansion 3 as well. The preview embargo is good up for that. So I can say a bit about it. Now that I say that, I'm like double checking because I'm suddenly like, I'm pretty I think it passed while I was away. That went up yesterday. Cool, yeah. So that's great. We can talk about it a bit. Which, man, it's another game that I am liking quite a bit. Like, the thing that jumps out at me is how, like, more so than any other kind of, you know, quote-unquote Mario game, it feels like you're playing through a Mario cartoon a bit. There's just a lot more kind of, like, personality and cutscenes and that kind of thing. But just the touches with, like, the animation stuff. Like, when Luigi is scared by something, he stands up, like, stiff like a board. You could practically see him shivering in his head, like, kind of lingers looking at whatever it was that scared him as he kind of, like, jaunts away. It just looks so great.
Yeah, someone shared a gift today of Luigi petting the ghost dog, and I'm like, huh, it's just something that I would assume you wouldn't be able to do in a Mario game, and I think that might be indicative of, like, where they're going and, like, what they're trying to portray. What are your bona fides here? What is your history with Luigi's Mansion?
Playthrough, oh gosh, well, I imported a Japanese GameCube when I was a kid, so I played through the first Luigi's Mansion in Japanese, which wasn't very much text in that game. I think a lot of it was in English, so I was okay. I think I had to use GameFAQs for some of it. There was, like, one puzzle, like, where you had to, like, select dialogue options. It was, like, the ghost playing the music from past Mario games. You had to pick them, and I couldn't read anything. So, and then I think when the game, like, actually came out in English, I played through it again. Actually didn't beat Dark Moon. I liked it, but I fell off it after playing quite a bit of it. Something about, like, the resetting for every mansion was a little off-putting to me. And I like how this one, it's one big mansion, or hotel, really. But you have all these different floors, and the different floors kind of, like, they're set apart in a way. So each floor has its own kind of completion rate, and it can have its own theming and whatnot.
So does it feel like there's a lot of diversity of content?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's another kind of mix between action and puzzles, a bit more on the puzzle side. And again, a lot more just kind of going around, messing around. What's nice is, like, there's gems hidden in every floor, right? And so you want to, like, get all the gems to complete it. It's like 6 of them or something. And a lot of those are, like, very puzzle oriented. So it's kind of fun to go around, mess with things, try to figure out how to unlock this gem or that gem or what have you. And, like, that plunger, that tool where you can shoot this plunger out, then you can kind of suck that up and you can use that to, like, move things and open things. It kind of opens things up for a lot more interaction.
Yeah, I haven't played any of the previous ones. I've played them, like, I've started them, but I haven't, like, you know, given it a real try. And I've always been like, oh, I should go back. But I think I'm probably just going to jump right into Luigi's Mansion 3. I'm.
Oh, you're not going to understand any of the lore. It's definitely not an issue.
And it seems like this one might be the best one. Like, they might have, like, really figured out the formula here.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's going to be a pretty easy case to make here.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. I've got my, like, the second token of, like, my Nintendo double pass thing ready to go, and I think that's what I'm going to spend it on. So I'm excited. When's, like, can you say when the review is? Like, when you can actually, like...
I don't know. The game comes out on the 31st, right, so, okay. You know.
Yeah. I mean, is it going to be a good game for people to play on Halloween? The people who aren't going to, like, go out, like, if you're too old for trick or treating but not cool enough to go out to parties, is this a cool thing to do?
Yeah, you know, I think me and you both like things that are quote unquote like spooky and not scary. This is perfectly one of those things. Absolutely. The other great thing about it is how, like, you know, your like menu and your map is all on a Virtual Boy that you
no
have.
No way, really.
It's not really. It's not called a Virtual Boy. It's called something else, but it's a Virtual Boy, and it's all red. And they're definitely making jokes about it.
That sold me right there for sure. I love when Nintendo is like self-referential and self-deprecating.
Self-deprecating. That's very exciting.
Anything else?
No, those two and the trip kept me pretty busy. I mean, I'm playing World of Warcraft Classic. I'm level 50 now. A lot of my other friends have already been 60 and are killing, like, Onyxia and doing a lot of the other endgame stuff. And I'm like, guys, I'm trying. I have so many other things I need to play, too. I'm working on.
Well, I'm playing a few things here or there. There's a couple games that I started the Outer Worlds. Can't talk about that quite yet, although I'm looking forward to talking about that. I really want to see what other people think of that. But that'll I think the review embargo.
That's usually code word for me for I either really like something or really don't like something. And I want to see if everyone else agrees with me.
Yeah, I think so. We'll see. There might be a little bit of both. We'll see. Okay. I have been playing that Valfaris game. Have you heard about this at all?
A little bit.
So yeah. Valfaris is like a heavy metal. It's sort of like Blackthorn and Metroid, Super Metroid. Blackthorn, for people who don't remember, is like a old Blizzard Super Nintendo game with like a lot of like, it's like very animation heavy. And it's also like a metal cover. This game takes that, like the metal part of it to like the extreme. And it's also very sci-fi. So it's like, yeah, it's like that sci-fi metal. But you are just this badass who, for example, when he picks up a new weapon, he just turns to the screen and starts headbanging. Like that is that's the attitude they're going for here. And it really works. It's like you're just destroying all these gross alien monsters. It's you know, very pixelated, but also like that very detailed pixelation that I'm a fan of right now. And it's just, it's got a really good attitude. I'm really into what it's like laying down. The probably the most interesting gameplay system is, like, you know, it's 2D side-scrolling combat, but it kind of mixes in that a little bit of that Dark Souls sort of thing where there is a risk reward with how you go about dealing with death and checkpoints. It's a, you know, a little bit like Shovel Knight too. So there's
Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order does the same.
Right. Yes. By the way. Yeah. So like there are checkpoints, and if you pass up the checkpoint. And you don't like put a token in to like actually activate it, you save those tokens, and those tokens add to your life bar. But if like you want to, like, if you really want to have that checkpoint, you go ahead and just spend it, and you're gonna have a little bit less life, but you're gonna be able to like restart there if you're dying a lot. And it's a good system, and it really makes you think about exploring the world and like how you are going to you're like, okay, this part, I'm getting good at this part. Maybe I should just like skip this checkpoint. And you begin thinking differently about like the, like moving through the physical world, which I appreciate. It's something that doesn't really happen in other games.
Now I need to clarify, because I thought you were just going to talk about like, if somebody kills you, you need to like kill them to get your.
Right. No, it's in that same wheelhouse.
That was the Star Wars thing.
Yeah, no, it's in that same wheelhouse. It's like more like Shovel Knight, where like you get a reward for not using the checkpoint. So.
Right.
But this is more tangible to the gameplay with, you know, getting a life bar and not necessarily just like earning more currency. But it's a good game. I'm into it. I'm playing it on PC, but I'm playing it like connected to my TV, so it's like really huge, and it kind of feels like a game like they thought like most people are going to be playing on Switch or something. But playing it on a giant screen with like that low res, that low fidelity graphics, I'm really into that style. So I'm going to see that one through. And then the other thing I've been playing is Ring Fit Adventure, which.
Oh man, how Ring Fit have you gotten?
Not very, because right in the middle of like 2 days after getting it, I did the first 2 days where I'm like, I'm keeping up with it. I'm doing a lot of exercise. And then like the second half of my sickness came and got me and just knocked me on my ass. Oof. And it wasn't just like, oh, I'm not feeling well. It is like, it made my muscles all like tense up and become like completely fatigued. So it's like the exact thing that would keep you from exercising. And I really didn't feel, it took me like a week to recover from that. So it was like really hard to get back on it. But when I was playing it, there are aspects of it that I really like. It is, it's really well made. It's, you know, it's a slick Nintendo game. It has, excuse me, it has a really good combination of exercise and action RPG. And you could tell like that was the goal here, was to distract people from the fact that they're exercising, by creating like these meta layers of progression and combat that you're going to go through. And like, you know, there's a skill tree and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, that I'm going to be thinking about that instead of the fact that I'm squatting. And there's definitely some attraction there, and there's some pull there, and I think some people are going to be like more into that than other people. And I definitely fall on the side of I appreciate it, but it's not going to be, I could tell that it's not working on me the way that they intended, where it's like, oh, I'm going to be so happy to exercise because I'm playing this action RPG. For me, I've had a lot better results from games like Beat Saber or VR Boxing or Dance Dance Revolution, where those games, while I'm playing them, help me get into like that zen state where I'm pushing through the fact that I'm exercising, and then I just keep going and going and going, even though I'm completely worn out because I'm not thinking about my body. I'm thinking about playing this game. I'm thinking about doing really well and getting a high score and just like feeling the music and stuff like that. And Ring Fit Adventure never does that. I don't think it's ever going to really get to that point. I think that it gets the closest when you are running through the world, and you run through the world just by, like, you know, running in place, lifting up your knees. And as so, like, you get to like steps in the world, you need to high step to really get up the steps. And you can like point the ring up and down to, like, if you point the ring down and like squeeze it, you can like jump in the air and float because it creates like this wind beneath you. So there's all these like cool things happening. But then like the battles happen, and the battles feel much more like you're just doing a regular exercise game because you're just choosing a menu of different exercises, and then those are your attacks, and you have to do like several sets of them, and it's like you lose the pacing from like running through the open world. And you know what's happening is like they're working out a lot more different parts of your body than some of those other games I mentioned. I think Beat Saber is like really good aerobic exercise. You're going to be working out your arms, but you're not necessarily like working out your chest muscles or your shoulders in the same way that you are when like you are just going to put this ring above your head and squeeze it. And that's going to be working specific muscles. And if you're a person who wants to like go through your own body and like work out specific parts of your body, Ring Fit Adventure, I think, is really good at that, because the Ring Con itself is a very well-made and well-designed a piece of exercise equipment. It is, the resistance is very like consistent, and it feels good. And it's not like it's going to like wobble. You don't feel like you're going to break it. So you can really feel like you can, you know, really go to town with these exercises. For people that want to like be working a variety of different muscle groups, this is really going to be good for you. But I don't go into it expecting it to be like, oh, I hate exercising, and this is going to be the thing that's going to get me through. I think you're going to have the same problems with this as you would with any other exercise thing. Where it might work is if you are someone who like doesn't need the motivation to like go all out during a session, and you just need something to like to string you along over like a long period of time, over like matter of weeks, it might be better at that, because the action RPG part, it is good. It is satisfying. It is cool to level up. The dragon boss is really fun to fight, and all that stuff really works. But for me, it's like, I can tell that I'm going to be so much better off going back to Beat Saber, going back to VR Boxing. So it was hard to like really give this a full endorsement.
Do you think this is going to be like a big Wii Fit style hit, or is it going to be more like a Nintendo Labo?
I think it might be somewhere in the middle. Because I feel like it's impossible for this to be Wii Fit again, because Wii Fit was the thing, and you know it was like 10 years ago now or whatever, maybe longer. I honestly can't tell. I can't remember. But the people that would have bought this, or that would buy this, are going to be the same people who already bought Wii Fit, and they might be like, oh, I still have that Wii Fit in my closet, and I haven't used it in 5 years. I don't know if I necessarily need to go like do that same thing again. I think people are going to remember that they gave up, and that they'll feel that same way about this. But that said, it is cool. The Switch is popular. I think the Switch Lite is especially going to like give a lot of people like a chance to get in on the platform, and they might be like, oh, I got the Switch Lite, and maybe I'll get that exercise thing. The problem there is this is a really bad thing to use with the Switch Lite. I just wouldn't do that. I would play this on the TV and only on the TV. But still, I think there's a chance for it to be a success. I just can't possibly see it being the next Wii Fit. Like, that seems too far-fetched.
Speaking of the Switch Lite, are you going to get into news now?
Yeah, let me talk about the other two games real quick. Switcher 3.
Oh, man, I know. Such a good... I thought that was it. I had such a
you did, good, but good I hate you, and I'm not going to let you have it.
Yeah, fair enough.
The Witcher 3 Switch and Overwatch Switch. Do you have any curiosity about those? I've been playing both.
I mean, How's it going?
Witcher 3 is really actually impressive. You know, it's very low resolution, but it just doesn't matter because you're playing it wherever. And the comparisons to the other platforms just don't make any sense when you're like, oh, but I'm playing the Switch in the back of a car or on the commute or in bed. Switch is so versatile. Having that game and having it work is kind of like a miracle. And it absolutely does work. It like meets that. It goes beyond like the minimum threshold of playability and like and being able to see things, even though it's like 540p or whatever. So I've been really into that. That's been cool to actually play here or there, although I'm hesitating to put a lot of time into like such an old game. So I'm like only like an hour and a half in or whatever.
Right. I mean, it's just nuts that game is portable.
Right.
It is like and it such works. A big game.
Overwatch, for me, Overwatch has been great. It has been the exact game I remember playing on the PC, and I haven't played it very much recently. But it's like I picked it up and I'm like, oh, this is just still that game, and I'm still having a good time playing it. I have only been playing it handheld, so I haven't noticed any input lag, which some people are complaining a lot about, but apparently the input lag is worse when you're docked.
I can imagine. I think if you're playing Overwatch docked, I don't know why you got
this. Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too. I have not even touched it docked. I'm going to because I want to check it out and see the input lag for myself. But if you're playing on Switch Lite or you're only going to play handheld, there are zero issues. It works just fine. I was trying to see, I didn't like get the high frame rate camera out or anything to like see the input lag, but I was really trying to pay attention and I could not notice any input lag at all in handheld mode. So, I think if you're in that situation, go ahead and get this. You'll be fine.
I still play quite a lot of Overwatch on PC, and I feel like I'd be a little bit of a brat about the frame rate, about not having a mouse and keyboard. Well, and yeah. I also just don't like the idea of all my progression not carrying over, which is like, I don't expect crossplay, but I think it kind of sucks that like I don't have my costume.
And you sign into your Blizzard account. So it's like, why wouldn't it work?
Right.
I definitely feel you on that. If you're someone who still plays regularly on PC, I probably wouldn't get this version. But you know, if you played a lot of Splatoon, you want another shooter on the Switch and you haven't touched this before, I think this is just it's a perfectly serviceable version. So yeah, they did a good job on it. God, I wish we had a segue to get us into the news.
Yeah. If our first story was about that Overwatch event being canceled in New York,
yeah, I guess we could go to that one. How about that? The Blizzard event for the Overwatch in New York was canceled by Blizzard.
Supposed to have the voice actors there. It's you know, it's just like this weird reminder we're kind of past this era of good feelings.
Yeah, it is very much over. So, I mean, I'm sure most people have heard about the Blizzard story. We're not going to go over everything, but this was definitely like the latest sort of incident in this long running thing of like a Blizzard Hearthstone player saying "Free Hong Kong, Revolution of Our Time," or "Liberate Hong Kong, Revolution of Our Time," in an interview for a Hearthstone tournament in Taiwan. That player immediately getting a ban and his money taken away, as well as like the two casters who interviewed him. They also got a ban. Since then, there's been a lot of stuff. Like Blizzard had on a Friday night came out with a statement finally and was like, "Oh, we're gonna like pull back a little bit. We're gonna give him his money, and it's only gonna be a."
Pull back a little.
It's only going to be a 6-month ban, and only a 6-month ban for the casters.
Who did nothing,
right? So
maybe
the obvious implication here by many critics is that Blizzard did this as a way to placate China, China, who is very, very sensitive about anything to do with Hong Kong, especially anything to do with Liberate, any of these sort of just outside the border colonies. China is a very oppressive state. It is also a state that like censors a lot of things. But the category, the tier of things that it censors the most, like vociferously, is anything to do with these colonies like Taiwan, Hong Kong, Tibet. Anything to do with those, it really takes seriously, and it doesn't care about the Streisand effect. It's just going to crack down on anyone saying anything. And Blizzard gave into that, it seemed like, and they said they didn't in their statement, but I'm
I think everyone
kind of agrees that they did. And you know,
right? And I mean, they're saying, you know, China had nothing to do with it, and I think everybody, myself included, has a very hard time believing.
So yeah, I mean, the Chinese Blizzard statement itself said like they're going to do this to defend the you know, the pride and respect of,
right, China. And obviously that was written by, like, you know, the Chinese, right, Blizzard
people. But it also feels like this all of this might have come down from Chinese Blizzard because of the way it happened so fast.
Yeah,
and it was so like. So serious, and to me, like the indication was when they banned the casters, it was like, okay, this is coming from the Chinese side, because I don't,
right? Because I mean, why would North America Blizzard come down that hard on them? Like, I almost get the feeling that J. Albrecht had like nothing to do with that, yes, decision, but he has to own up to it because he's the, right, president, and he has to kind of like make the,
yeah, best, he can't of it, be like, oh, but this was not, we didn't make this decision, it was China, and people are like, wait, what does that mean?
Was that, aren't you, yeah, in charge? Like,
aren't you in charge? And like, how do you, like, you, like, even beyond like explaining that to fans, how do you explain that to investors? Investors are going to be like, wait, aren't you in charge of this company? Like, what, why is there two different sort of groups within this company that we thought that, you know, we understood how it worked? So there's a lot of things happening here. But it, you know, to me, it's like, so like when you try to get into this, it feels like you can really get into the weeds of like, oh, well, we don't fully understand what's going on between Hong Kong and China. And I don't like I'm not an expert in that. And, you know, I think all that's fair to admit. We're not experts on that. I think what he said, what Blitzchung said, who was the player who got banned, was, you know, liberate Hong Kong. And if you like just look at that on its face, it's basically just saying freedom is something that we should have in Hong Kong. And it's like, okay, like how divisive is that actually? It feels like it shouldn't be divisive at all. And the only reason it's divisive is if you're China.
Well, they want to be free from, right, China.
Exactly. So Blizzard said that, like, oh, if anyone came out and said something of equivalent divisiveness in any other direction, they are going to do the same punishment. And that also just feels like total horseshit. Because people are going to be able, like, people could say a lot of, like, if you come out and say, oh, climate change is bad, that's a divisive issue for some people. Is that, like, are you going to ban someone for that? I just don't, it's not going to happen.
But that's the thing, like, the actual rules just says, like, yeah, you can't say, like, things that would upset a group of people. And the rule even says, it's up to Blizzard's discretion what that means.
And you
means.
Know why it's written that way.
No one knows, like, what it means.
We don't want someone coming out here and saying some racist shit. And that's why they wrote the rule that way. And now they're using that rule to silence someone on an issue of, like, of liberty in their own territory. And it's...
Yeah.
It's
BlizzCon's going to be fun.
BlizzCon is it's happening, and it's not going to get canceled.
November 1st.
It's coming up fast.
They can't cancel it now.
2 weeks away.
They can't cancel it now. Everyone bought tickets. It's you have the convention center. You have games you're announcing there. It's happening, but I don't think they know what to do. I really wonder if there's still going to be like Q&As. I mean, even last year, the Q&As became a bit of a shit show, and that was just because they were making a mobile
Diablo. Right, and that's where like it gets really sticky, because that mobile Diablo game attracted a lot of hate because, oh, it's just a Chinese mobile game. And it's like, oh, there was definitely some xenophobia happening under the surface there towards China. And, you know, there was some fair criticism, too. People didn't want a Diablo mobile game. They wanted Diablo 4. Fine, whatever. But there's definitely like that quickly turns into, the sort of like the undercurrent of mistrust of China that has run through gaming over the last couple of years. Like all cheaters come from China. Like I remember like the early days of
Chinese.
Yeah. In the early days of PUBG, everyone's like, there should be separate servers for China, 'cause that's where all the cheaters are coming from. And it's like, you know, there's always some truth to this stuff where it's like, oh, there's a lot of cheaters, in China. There's just a lot of players in China. So just by, you know, the law of like big numbers, that's just how it's going to work out. But people turn that into, you know, that's just what Chinese people are like. And I think that is going to definitely spill over at BlizzCon when they get to that point where like anything dealing with this and anything dealing with Diablo and anything dealing with like, an American developer, Wyatt Ching, who has, you know, ancestry from China, who is like overseeing Diablo Mobile. Like you know, he could just face some outright racism stemming from this.
I mean, they do the Overwatch World Cup at BlizzCon. What happens when the Chinese team
They're
going to get booed. They're totally going to get booed.
There's going to be, do they just put, who is at Blizzard that is beloved still that they could put on stage that it would be the least hard for people?
Kaplan.
They're just going to make Kaplan do everything?
Maybe they'll make Kaplan do everything. Because everyone else is gone. The Ben Brody's gone.
I honestly thought Kaplan left. Did he just leave Overwatch?
No.
Okay, I just mixed things up.
As far as I knew. Yeah, no.
I must have just mixed up with Ben Brode. Okay. You're right.
Bro left. Brode's doing that Marvel something now with his new...
Right. Movie. It's a mess.
But... I'm looking forward to the next and potentially last BlizzCon.
Right, I mean,
because I bet if this goes south, they're gonna be like, why don't we just do Nintendo Directs or whatever the hell, and not rent this giant
space.
Because
the reason you do BlizzCon is because everyone has magical feelings about this company, and that stuff is dissipating fast. Because
right, I mean, even last year they're still doing the whole we're Blizzard family stuff, and it was. Like, as soon as, they all started getting mean and mad at them about the mobile game, it's like, does anyone really believe that anymore? I don't know if I'm not getting that feeling. I feel like these guys hate you. Which, some families do, but...
But then you don't have as many Thanksgivings together at that point, right? So maybe it's time to, end this. And that I was literally thinking that right before we started recording is, they might just stop doing BlizzCon. I'm not surprised to hear that that's sort of what you're thinking too. And I imagine you're right that they're thinking the same thing.
We'll see how this one goes, I guess. I mean, they can get through this one, then I guess BlizzCon is safe for a while, because this is about as unfortunate. That's the other reason too why I just find it hard to believe that the North American Blizzard team had anything to do with that initial punishment, because they know BlizzCon's coming up. They know Overwatch and Switch is coming up. Why would they want to jeopardize
and
the thing?
And
obviously it became a bigger deal than any of us probably would have guessed.
But you're a video game company in America. I feel like anyone making games in America fully understands the Streisand effect, and that when you try to silence someone by punishing them, you're only going to make it explode. And I think everyone involved at Blizzard in America would understand that. And the reason I'm convinced that it did come from China is because they might understand that and they wouldn't care. It doesn't matter. They don't care about that.
The only way that punishment happens if it's made by somebody whose main priority is what is China going to think about this? And that's why it just it rings absolute bullshit that China had nothing to do with this. And why did you freak the hell out at this moment in time? Because it's either there's kind of this problem of how come you're not a part of this decision, or how is the decision fumbled that badly, where you're just you've jeopardized two major events now for your company. The employees cannot be happy. You wish you could hear. And, they're probably not being talked to either, because you know how leaks are these days. So, anything they tell them is just going to go out to, Kotaku or whatever. So, they're just probably all grumbling in the dark.
And I'm, I feel, super comfortable being very, very critical of Blizzard here, because there's, it's not, I was starting this point earlier, we don't fully have a grasp on the exact politics of Hong Kong and China. Freedom is good, and to me, all I really need to know is, the Hong Kong protesters want self-determination in their government, and that's sort of you should absolutely have that.
Yeah, that seems like a thing.
Right, I understand there's some complexities there where it's Hong Kong is, a former British colony, and some...
So were we, Jeff!
It's exactly my point. It's they're a former British colony, and they, that is their idea of, what self-governance looks like, is they want to, go back to, to having that same thing, and I'm okay, sure, there's some issues there, I guess, when you're dealing with China, as a state related to China, but so what? And also, when it comes to us criticizing Blizzard, we're actually not even really talking about Hong Kong versus China, we're talking about an American company versus, and dealing with China, and if an American company is going to silence someone to placate any foreign government, you're gonna have to deal with anger from America people, because like we don't stand for that. Like there, it is like
right.
Honestly, the one thing that America people won't stand for when they're talking to corporations, because we let them make money in China, and there's some issues there. There's issues doing business in a lot of countries, and we understand that, and we're very tolerant of it. Like you do business in Saudi Arabia, and like some people are like, oh, you probably shouldn't. I wish WWE wouldn't do business in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, you still kind of
end up watching some wrestling here or there, and you know, it's you make a lot of sacrifices as a consumer under capitalism, because it's very hard to like be moral in the system. But there's a line where it's like, if you are going to help a government go after people who are critical of that government, that is, it's a big bold line that every right. company should understand. And it's just
so weird, because I mean, they're in it is a U.S. company still, right? Like
right?
don't like traditional American values mean anything,
right? And it's just like, it's even just if you're thinking about like your bottom line, this is gonna enrage a lot of people, and you just kind of think about it. I mean, you're worried about enraging China, and not just China, the Chinese government, the Chinese people, because of the way the government is set up, are also very quick to demonize any company that would be supporting Hong Kong. We saw that with the NBA. People showed up to those NBA games in China waving Chinese flags to be like, fuck you, NBA. How dare you say anything about Hong Kong? And so like the it's not just like, oh, we're going to get punished by the government. We're going to lose out on consumer sentiment in China. And that's what companies are worried about. But still, it's just like, just don't cross that line, or at the very least find a way. Like they could have like just dealt with this in a much more deft way, where they were like, oh, you were kind of being off topic in this interview. Here's a slap on the wrist. Please don't do that. And it would not have been as big of a deal if they would have just been like,
no,
you right. know, even if there was no ban and they did dock him some of his money, I feel like people would have been like, oh, that's kind of fucked up, but whatever. I mean, you could kind of see why like they don't want people bringing up politics. I feel like
they could have just disqualified him from the rest right. of the tournament, and it would have been
right.
fine.
And it's like it had to be the nuclear option because of like the way that the Chinese government is. So yeah.
Right. It's how it's all going. It's just, you know, all these companies, they want to start think of it as one big, happy, you know, world where, you know, China has a Disneyland now. But, you know, these are all different nations with completely different priorities and ideals. And they don't play nice with each other sometimes. And it's getting awkward when you're trying to sell all those people the same yeah. thing.
And existing in that global environment is we understand it's complicated as consumers. I think a lot of the times we get that, like, you have to make some sacrifices to sell to different cultures. There are just some of those lines you don't cross, and I think Blizzard crossed it here, and that's why so many people reacted so vehemently to what happened. All right. I think enough Blizzard. The story's not going to go away, even if we don't talk about it next week. BlizzCon's in 2 weeks, so we'll be back on this, I'm sure.
There'll be, and I'll be there. I'll be on the ground yeah. floor.
All right. MPDs came out today. What were the big stories you took away from the MPDs today?
Well, NBA 2K did absolutely yeah. nuts in 1 month. I mean, it was number one, but it immediately became the best-selling game in the U.S. for the year, which is... I mean, I don't think this is the first year where NBA 2K has been more popular than Madden.
No, I think the past like 2 or 3 years, that's been the case.
It's not yeah. so. I mean, the NBA is not more popular than the NFL, right? Like, that's not the case. So, like, what?
Well, I mean, NBA is a very good game. At least it has been in the last couple of years. Madden's definitely stagnating. I think there's just a lot of culture within gaming that is like ripe for the NBA in a way that, like, I think. The fan base for the NFL, I think, is maybe a little bit older, a little bit whiter, maybe even. And NBA is, you know, much more popular, like, you know, black people who are huge in video gamers. Typically, there's a lot of people, like young black people, who are huge in the games. And if you go on like Twitch, like the like chances are, if you're going to see a popular black streamer, a lot of times they're playing NBA 2K. So I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, oh, if you're just, we're not looking in the right spots a lot of times. We're like a little bit culture blind. It's like, oh, if you look over here, it's like, oh, of course, this is one of the most popular games of the year every year. And I think that's kind of what's happening with NBA 2K. But still, like, to shoot immediately to the top of the charts for all of 2019, I almost said 2012. Man, it is not 2012.
No, not
yeah, close. But to shoot right to the top of the charts, that is impressive.
Right. And then, I mean, Borderlands, you know, 3, which was, what, number 2 for the month? And number it's three, already, what,
number 3 for the year.
For the year. So, which is weird, because it seems like that's a game that people aren't, like, talking about a ton, but immediately a giant hit.
Yeah, I think a really big hit. I mean, it's easily, like, it seems like it easily justified the wait and everything. I almost feel like it maybe should have been number one for the year if it was like really going to reach its potential, because like I feel like when Destiny came out in like this time zone a couple years ago, it immediately went to number one when it came out, and it's like it's Borderlands 3 is not quite at that level, but it's definitely in that top tier of like blockbuster hits. So they got to be happy with that. And both those games, NBA Borderlands 3, are from Take-Two, the publisher Take-Two oversees 2K.
Yeah, so they had
a really good month. I bet they're feeling really, really good about that. And then they have Red Dead coming to PC next month. So they're going to be it's going to be a good year for them.
But aside from that, I mean, nothing else was too surprising. Like Link's Awakening, like was
number
that
four with no digital sales. Like where
that's where you would like think that would be
right.
Switch was number one.
Switch hardware was number one. Switch Lite gave it a boost, of course. Gears 5 at number 7. Which I think is that seems right for like a big new first party Microsoft release that is also immediately on Game Pass.
Right. It's like, so Game Pass kind of makes that
right.
harder
to get a read on. These charts are starting to be very, very strange.
Right. But it's weird, even with the caveats, maybe you would think like, it seems like Gears 5 is more important for Microsoft than Link's Awakening remake is.
Right. But I mean, I think getting people onto Game Pass is more important for Microsoft than getting people to buy just Gears 5. So it's tough. It's really hard to tell like whether or not they would consider that a success. My guess is that they do consider it a success. It sounds like a lot of people play that game, and it, you know, it's just building up. It's part of that building narrative of like, oh, Game Pass is this really good value. And you'd be kind of weird not to subscribe to it. So I think they're probably pretty happy with where it is. So, there's not a lot else going on here on the chart. Code Vein made the top 10. Breakpoint came out October 4th, which is like this chart ran through October 5th, so it's number 6 on here. So for 2 days of sales, that's pretty good. I would say maybe it should have actually been higher, because like you get a lot of sales in the first 2 days. And Wildlands was one of those games where it came out, it also immediately went to number one, and also it was like one of the top selling games for that year. So we'll have to see how it does next month, and maybe kind of combine those. Maybe even ask Matt Piscatella next month when the MPD comes out exactly how Breakpoint compares to Wildlands. not a lot else going on here, so we can move on to what's next. Did you pay attention to any of this Riot news? They had the League of Legends 10th anniversary stream.
Only kind of humorously, because like me and Dean were at events, right, and I was like, oh, it looks like they're keeping Jeff busy at night.
Yeah, I didn't even know this was I mean, I knew the 10th anniversary was coming up, but it's not until October 27th. And I guess I like remember vaguely them talking about doing a stream for this. And I'm like, I see someone post. I think I saw the Reset Era thread go up about League of Legends going to mobile and consoles. I'm like, oh, okay, well, weird. I guess I should go. Maybe it's a leak or something. I'll check this out. And it's like, oh, no, here are 5 other things that we're doing as well. And I'm like, okay, time to get to work. So, yeah, I think that's we'll start there. League of Legends Wild Rift. This is a port of, you know, legit League of Legends, and it is going to be playable on iOS, Android, as well as consoles. Excuse me. It's coming out in 2020. And it's a port, but it's also like an adaptation. So it's not going to play with the PC version. It's going to have a slightly different map. They're making some changes, but if you like play both versions, you'll get bonuses and stuff like that. And, it sounds like it's going to have some form of crossplay between the mobile and the console versions, but you know,
Maybe you have, like, you get to keep the characters.
Yeah, I think that sound that seems like what's going to happen for sure. I think it'd be weird if they didn't do that, but we'll see. I feel like they haven't sort of gotten to those details yet. They're going to start running some tests starting in China, and then they're going to open up a beta here in the fall, and then it's going to open up completely in 2020. Teamfight Tactics is going to hit mobile soon. That was like, that is their auto chess, and now it's coming to mobile. I'll probably give it a chance now that it's on mobile, because I'm like, I'm not going to download League of Legends just to play that, but I'll check it out on mobile. And then, hey, Mike, how about a new card game?
Why
Legends
not?
Of Runeterra. So this is their, you know, their take on the collectible card battler.
Their artifact.
Exactly.
I'm stoned out over how big of a
flop. I mean, honestly, it's probably about time we go back and look and see, and like maybe we should write about exactly what happened there.
They're remaking it now, right?
I mean, they say that, but I feel like if you're that team, aren't you just working on auto chess now? Aren't you working on whatever they call it? I can't remember what theirs is called.
No, they're allowed to work on whatever they want, remember?
Uh-huh. You probably want to work on the game that is like super successful, but I don't know. That game is also coming out in 2020, but they're running tests. I think you can like sign up for it to play the PC version. It's also coming to mobile. Like right away, they had like Kriparian. Is that how you say his name? Kriparian. Yeah, he had a video explaining what the game is, and like as soon as they made the announcement, he was streaming it live on Twitch. Right, smart stuff. He didn't have hashtag ad either, so I think they just went to him and said, "Hey, you want to play it?" And I think he just did. So we'll see. It feels like maybe now is the right time to launch another card game. If another card game could ever succeed, maybe now is the time. But also, I have no idea.
Yeah, the last chance.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. It felt like before this moment, it would have been dumb to try to launch another one. Like Hearthstone rules, and people are into Magic the Gathering, and maybe there's some other ones, but. It does feel like, oh, people are mad at Blizzard. Maybe there's a chance. But it's like Riot is like also very much a Chinese company. So I feel.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the goodwill.
They're much more of a Chinese company, really. They're actually like 100%.
Yeah, and a lot of their money comes from China, like in a way that I feel like more than even Blizzard's money comes from China, beyond just like who's invested. So, yeah. And they came out and said, like, we don't want people being political at our stuff, please.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, without even, no yeah. one's even they're asking like, oh, shit, them, gotta, but they were just straight yeah, up like, don't. Don't you dare even try that.
So we'll see. Couple other things, they announced like three different projects. These are things they like don't have official names, but they wanted to like say, hey, we're working on this stuff. The first is Project A. This is a tactical character-based shooter. So
that one was kind of surprising. Like they're making an Overwatch.
Yeah, they're making an Overwatch mixed with like, I in my article, I said Counter-Strike Global Offensive, but really what I was thinking was that Chinese Crossfire game. It looked like Crossfire mixed with Overwatch. So like a little bit more military tactical, but still definitely Overwatch style characters. We'll see. I think that has a huge chance of succeeding just because I think it probably will be a huge success in China. So even if it doesn't succeed here, it's probably not going to matter. It's still going to be this thing that lasts forever. And then the next one was Project L, which is the fighting game, which we kind of knew they were working on.
We knew because they bought Radiant. Run by
Seth Killian's fighting game company. I can't remember the name of the fighting game they were working on. It was like
they were making on this this one that was like it was like a bunch of robots, and the whole point of it was that I interviewed him about it at one point. The whole point was like it wasn't really about like these complex inputs.
And it was about being able to dial up what you wanted at the time, but like to get the head to head battling aspect of a fighting game without having to do the execution part, which is like. I think they're like, we just want to make it accessible.
Right, they want to focus on the decision-making and not the, like, I know the button presses for this.
Right, like the sort of, like, head-to-head poker thing part of it, but, like, yeah. They showed, like, just tiny snippets of gameplay of that. It looks like Street Fighter V with League of Legends-style characters. I think they are actually League of Legends characters. They are, in fact, because I remember it's, like, the one lady with all the tails, which is in every one of these games. Yeah, Ari, whatever.
Or whatever.
So that...
I don't know how I remember that. I haven't played.
So that's happening. Not a surprise. But they are talking about it, which I guess is kind of surprising after being like a one game company for 10 years. And then the last game was Project F, and they just teased this in a much lighter way than the other games. And the one screenshot I looked at, it made it look like a very bright Diablo is what it looks like. So it takes place in the Runeterra universe. So it's in the same universe as the card game, which I'm like, is that not the League of Legends universe? I don't know.
Yeah, wait, what?
I'm lost there. So
okay. So they're just making games in any popular first esports thing, and then why not throw an extra
and I feel like
in there too?
If it's esports or if it has the potential to be popular in China, I think that's the kind of game they're making.
It sounds like they're all of a sudden going from being a one-game company to being another
Blizzard. Yes. Yes. Like, overnight. I mean, that's what it feels like to us. I'm sure for them this has been like a five-year project, but for everyone outside of there, it's like, okay, whoa, we blinked, and suddenly you've got all this stuff going on. And it doesn't end with just the games. They also announced an animated series that takes place in the League of Legends universe. And, you know, it has like movie quality animation. It looks really nice. And they didn't say anything else about it. Like, they didn't say like how you can watch it or when it's coming out, but it looked really cool. I imagine I feel like they could probably sell it to Netflix or something, but I also wonder if they'll just put it on their own, you know, League of Legends launcher or whatever, and you could just watch it there, but who knows. You know, there was some smaller stuff, but those are the big highlights. A lot of stuff happened at Riot. They have a lot going on. I think you summed it up right. They're just trying to be a Blizzard now, and it makes sense for like where they're at. Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. Fortnite 2. Chapter 2. Yeah, so they how much of this did you pay attention to that they shut?
Quite. I mean, everyone's talking about it. That's for sure. But sure was a good way to get people excited.
Yeah,
about
shut the game down, stop people playing it, and it really worked. So, excuse me. On Sunday, they sucked the entire game of Fortnite into a black hole, and not like just like the map, but like the user interface on the main menu also got sucked in, and it was just this black hole. If you booted up the game, all you saw was a black screen with like a tiny little dot in the middle that was like the black hole that sucked everything up. They were streaming that on the Fortnite account on Twitch and on Twitter, everywhere, like all weekend. And, you know, even through Monday, you couldn't play it. Like, the game was just completely shut down. And then on Tuesday, it comes back, new map, a new battle pass. And it seems like an event that was very successful for them to get people back in and playing. It definitely seemed like Fortnite was on the decline up to this point. Did you get that sense?
Yeah, but like not like a horrible way, but I mean it was just so big at one point that like, you know, there had to be a fall off, but you know it was still like what are they going to do about it? And they're going
to
do this.
Yeah, it's like of course they had something like in their pocket ready to go at the moment where it feels like the game was at its weakest. And it seems like they nailed it. We'll see if they could sustain it. It sounds like people are into this map. I think people are also into the new Apex Legends map, so it's not like they have no competition again. But yeah, right. I'm excited to kind of like just continue to watch it from a distance. I tried it real quick, and I'm like, oh yeah, I don't like Fortnite. So
that's right, you don't. I did at one point, but I still don't. If I was to go back into one suddenly, it would be Apex Legends, I guess.
Yeah, I keep thinking, I'm like, oh, I should go back and play PUBG, but there's no time for that, so I'm not going to do it.
There's no time for that.
Tell you what there is time for. The Analog Pocket.
Hey, oh yeah, this
looks like a very nice little thing. So, did you see all the specs for this thing? Have you seen how kind of like just beyond like I think what you could have expected from this product it is?
No, but I can tell you're excited to tell me.
I'm excited to tell you, Mike. So this is Analog, for people who don't know, that's the company that makes like the Super NT and the Mega SG, and those were like the hardware emulation versions of the Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis. And when I say hardware emulation, what that means is they use something called field programmable gate arrays. These are chips where you can, as a programmer, go in and change the behaviors of the chips to make them act just like other chips. And they have a brilliant engineer named Kevin Hortress or something like that. Kevin Horton, who goes by Kevtris, and he's really good at building cores for these chips to make them behave just like Super Nintendo's and just like Sega Genesis is. And so it's not software emulation. It is very accurate and the games behave just like they're supposed to. So now they are going from making these old consoles, home consoles, to making a portable that can play Game Boy, Game Boy Color, and Game Boy Advance games all just like you just plug in your cartridges and they will just go. And then if you,
oh wait, Jeff, I thought you used to always argue with me that Game Boy Color and Game Boy are the same platform.
Was that me? I don't think that was me.
Yeah, that was you.
You'll have to get the tape because I feel like that wasn't me. That wasn't me.
But keep continuing.
I feel like it wasn't me. All right. And then if you get adapters, you could put like Neo Geo Pocket, Game Gear, Atari Lynx. And they say on their website, it says and more. And I think what and more means is, so they have an FPGA chip in there that Kevin Horton has like, you know, rigged up with all these cores. But then there's a second FPGA chip that they are opening up to the community to build cores for. And what that means is it's going, this is like a portable little Mister. And if people don't know, the Mister is like this little device that you buy a kit of and you download all these cores and you can like get hardware accurate emulation on your own device. And it's very cool. There's a huge community for this. And now it's going to apply. Well, that's going to apply to the Analog Pocket, a portable with just incredible hardware. It's super sleek. It looks awesome. And to me, like, it all comes down to the screen. It's 3.5 inches. It's LCD. It has a resolution of 1600 by 1440. That's a 615 like pixels per inch pixel density.
That's pretty dense.
Yeah, it's nice.
I understand
so
that.
It is significantly sharper in terms of pixel density than even like an iPhone 11 Max Pro or whatever they call them. It's going to have a better screen than like a Mac Pro Retina. These games are going to look incredible. And that's one of the things is Analog enables you to output these old games at a native HD resolution. That's like one of the reasons you get them. Cause if you try to plug in the old retro hardware to a modern TV, things get wonky really fast and they don't look good. Analog fixes that, and now they're going to fix it in the portable form factor, and I'm very excited. There's some other...
I mean, I just need a system to play Game Boy Advance games in again anyway.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, because I'm like itching to be like, to play like all those Castlevania games from then and some other things, and I'm like...
Circle the Moon on this screen is going to be phenomenal. I can't wait. So it's $200. It's coming in 2020. They haven't narrowed it down from there, so it sounds like it's still a ways off, but people are already getting really excited about it. There's some other aspects of it that are really cool. You can get a dock, so you can plug it into your TV and play all those games on the TV. This is going to quickly become like the way to stream old portable games.
It's going to be so easy to stream it and
right.
capture video this
yes,
way.
It's going to really change that for a lot of people. And then they're also including something called NanoLoop, which is a music synthesizer program. That is, it's already exists. Oh, yeah. It's you can go out and get a cartridge for it for the Game Boy Advance. It's that's what it is. It's a 50 euro cartridge, and it's pretty hard to get nowadays. It's expensive and it's hard to find. They're just going to include it, and they want this to turn into a musical device, a tool for like electronic musicians. And I'm like, yeah, I think it really has potential to do that. I think a lot of people are going to be into that idea. And it's also just, it looks so sleek. It just looks so modern and cool. It's very much shaped like a Game Boy Pocket or a Game Boy Color. But it has a bump on the back to like host the shoulder buttons. So you can also play, it's got four face buttons and the shoulder buttons. So the Game Boy Advance is going to work. And then if they do like add support for Super Nintendo, that'll work as well. I am just into this thing. I cannot wait. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah. We'll have to kind of. I want to keep track of it. I want to see how. I hope like the supply is enough. I hope people aren't like struggling to get it. But we'll have to see. I'm not looking at the rest of the news though. There's only one other story, and it's NVIDIA is going to add ray tracing to more classic games. They've already added it.
Any of them I care about?
So they haven't said yet. But they've added it to Quake 2. They've added it to Minecraft, and I know you're big into Minecraft. You're just one of the biggest Minecrafters I know. I don't know. I feel like. They could, it's hard to like come up with something like what they could be adding it to, but it's like, I kind of hope like developers and old, like publishers are just like, oh, this could help us boost sales for some old catalog games, like add it to Knights of the Old Republic or something.
I was gonna say, like, add it to like Mirror's Edge or something like that,
right? Yeah,
I'm excited.
I mean, rebuild just like Doom, like the original Doom, even with those graphics, like, yeah, I feel like they could totally do that. I'm excited. I think that's a really good way to like use this technology and get people excited about it. And still in the early days where it's hard to implement it into modern games. NVIDIA's got a team dedicated to this. So hopefully it like results in a lot of cool stuff.
Did Dan Stadia get released?
Yes, it did. That's right. I was trying to, I knew there was something going on with Stadia. It's coming out, I think November 19th, I think it is. Let me look and see.
Pretty soon.
Stadia release date. November 19th. I got it right. All right. Kind of feel like it's gonna flop still.
Yeah, I absolutely do. There was just some other thing that like some Google thing. It was their VR thing. They just canceled again. Like,
yeah, Daydream. Done with it.
Instead of trying to like make it better, get people excited again. Like,
I mean, honestly, if I were them, I would have canceled Daydream too. It's
I get that one.
But
so. It is still the conception. The perception is that Google starts a lot of things.
Poorly timed, like a month before Stadia, to cancel your nearest gaming related thing. Yeah, it does feel like they are launching into beta too. They announced today, in a trailer earlier this week, that the wireless controller is only wireless when you're using it with the Chromecast. And then if you use it with like a phone or a PC, you have to plug it in because you can't just go seamlessly from one device to the other. Like they showed on stage a couple months ago, that's going to take some time. And it's like, why aren't these things ready now? It feels like you should be ready for launch.
Why are they in such a hurry to launch?
Don't know. Anyway, but like
not
like what's, and it's like they did a test of this technology last year with like Assassin's Creed and stuff. And it's like, Why didn't it just like you slowly build from that test in the exact way that Microsoft is doing? Like Microsoft is like, yep, we're still testing xCloud. That's not even the product. The product is going to be something different. This is just the technology that we're testing right now, and people are playing it right now. People are like actively using xCloud in the wild. Like that test has begun, and all you hear from it is, oh, it's working really well. People are like buying into that because Microsoft is like slowly, like transitioning us to that instead of like just throwing out something out in the way that Google is. I don't know. We're going to play it. I think I'm going to get like a review unit, I guess, whatever that means for this. I'll be able to figure it out for myself, but still it just feels like it's going to go out and die.
Yep. Yes. I'll be shocked if those Google like games of like the big people they brought on stage ever happen at this point.
Game or something. Excuse me. One small game, maybe. I just don't think they'll ever release a AAA game. That just seems completely not going to happen. Riot, real quick, Aaron Kelly pointed this out to me. The project letters from Riot is ALF. So if you put those together, it's Project ALF. And I think that's...
What, like the... like the
yeah, like the sitcom. So, I feel like there's something there, Mike.
What's there?
Riot and Elf coming together. We're gonna, yeah.
Finally.
Whatever. Maybe he's the next hero. You don't know. Shut up, Mike.
Are you sure it's not like Laugh, LAF, because it's League of Legends and it's LOL? Now you have Laugh.
I'm sure. I'm positive it's Elf.
Because mine immediately makes more sense.
Nothing makes more sense than ALF, Mike. Nothing.
I think Laugh makes more sense.
Let's end this stupid podcast. I'm done with you. All right. Where can everyone find you on the internet?
Twitter at Tokoto. Check out 90s Disney, a podcast about Disney in the 90s at 90sDisney.com.
I am Jeff Grubb on Twitter and on Twitch. And then on YouTube, it's Jeffrey Grubb. So youtube.com/Jeffrey Grubb. Yeah, there's a lot of games coming out. So on the next couple of podcasts, we'll be talking about more. I'll be talking about Outer Worlds soon. I mean, you could tell people about the Death Stranding review date, right? That was something that because everyone said so.
Yeah, I think so. I'm playing. Yeah, I'm working on it. So
yeah, it's all gonna happen. So check back next week. We'll have more to say, and then we're gonna keep going all the way through November, and then Star Wars will come out, and I'll be happy. So.
Star Wars come out. There's another thing that I hate to say. I feel like it's a big deal and no one's talking about it.
Yeah, I think it's going to change because after today, because the hype really did seem to like kick in. So, we'll see. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week. Until then, have a good one.